calling me Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
Do you dig ruins? Few things are cooler. I'll go a long way just to have a look at some good ruins. I think that was half the attraction of the Indiana Jones flicks, checking out those ruins. And his ruins guaranteed adventure because they were booby-trapped to make sure trespassers got dead, which made them irresistibly exciting. When I was a kid in Queens, there were always a few abandoned houses around, and each had crazy rumors. The owners were gone because of a double suicide, or the property had tripwires for silent alarms, stuff like that. We visited most of them, but all we ever saw was hobo detritus, pint bottles of Thunderbird, and cigarette butts. Of course, there are ruins and there are ruins. In Los Angeles, they call shit that's not even a century old ruins. One of them is a place called Solstice Canyon. You hike in a couple of miles and get seriously disappointed when you discover a concrete slab and a few crumbling fireplaces that were once part of some architect's fancy home. Then there's another graffiti-covered concrete mess they say was built by Nazis in the early 1940s. They figured that when Hitler marched into town, he could hole up there. Sounds like bullshit to me. More likely, Hitler would have chosen some movie mogul's Bel Air estate, not some crappy bunker. But why do we love ruins? Maybe the same reason we dig Halloween or El Día de los Muertos. Some primeval need to ponder the end. Or at least somebody else's end, huh? Hang around some serious ruins and you're walking with ghosts. I never understood why people think that about cemeteries. Those fit perfectly into the logic of our existence. People croak, they get buried. Nothing out of the ordinary there. That's the natural order of things. Where are the best ruins? Well, it's not so much of a selection in North America. Although sometimes entire cities can be ruins. Detroit might qualify. There are ruins in the making all across the country. Abandoned shopping malls. There's even a Facebook group about it. Millions and millions of retail square footage sitting there, empty. Which is kind of cool, because monster corporations turned Main Street into ghost towns with their big boxes and strip malls. Those guys were probably feeling pretty triumphant for a few decades. And now Bezos and Amazon has turned their malls into ruins. What goes around, comes around. I visited some banging ruins in Mexico at Chichen Itza. You can hear all about that in episode 27, Bluffing, at thatlarryshow.com. Really stunning stuff, but not so ancient. To get the vintage goods you need to visit Europe, or Asia, Middle East, that stuff is old. What will be the ruins of tomorrow, besides all those malls? Well, gas stations, if they ever really figure out fuel cell tech. How about airports? Will those go to seed with the advent of teleportation? What about schools? Does anyone really need to go to a building each day when you can get the same information online? I visited an abandoned school somewhere in the Texas Panhandle. It was weird, seeing hand-drawn posters promoting football games from decades ago, rusting overhead projectors, locker doors hanging open with some kid's forgotten windbreaker. Who was that kid, and why was he in such a hurry to get out of there? The exterior was equally spooky, swing sets swallowed by weeds, a flagpole leaning like the Tower of Pisa. I'll post some pictures at the show page, and you can see for yourself. How do they have a class reunion when the school is in ruins? Do they rent a banquet room at the Holiday Inn? It would hardly be the same, huh? All ruins have an aura of melancholia about them, but the feeling is more acute at a school. I guess that's because it's so relatable. What causes ruins? Well, often, short-sightedness. As a kid, I spent a lot of time in New York's famed Catskill Mountains, which in their heyday were packed with enormous plush hotels. The Granite, the Neville, the Concord, and maybe the most famous of all, Grossinger's. It was like Vegas in the mountains. Every big-name entertainer played those hotels. Then around the time they were legalizing gambling in Atlantic City, they took a vote in the Catskills, and all those blue-nosed morons voted it down. Degenerate gamblers were not welcome in their precious community. And now, there is no community. All those hotels went tits up. A few years ago, I took a drive through Grossinger's, once majestic and manicured grounds. All overgrown, some of it burned, lots of graffiti. Good thing there were no gamblers around. Even recent ruins, one with zero mystery factor, are still irresistible. Chernobyl, for instance. Years ago, some gutsy, rusky chick with a video camera zipped around Chernobyl on her motorcycle, and it was mesmerizing. A quick detour on Chernobyl. I suppose it was the product not of stupid Russians, but of stupid commies. Nobody's sure what started it, but I've known a couple of guys who survived Soviet Russia, and according to them, the people's preferred diet was Stoli, straight. And so most everyone was fucked up all the time, including the engineers at Chernobyl. Some Boris with an Olympic-caliber hangover, probably punched in after a two-day bender, sat down at the control console and face-planted on the self-destruct button. Shit happens, especially when you're half in the bag. They say it was the only nuclear mishap in the history of commercial nuclear power where radiation-related fatalities occurred. Countless guys have been blown up on oil rigs and hydroelectric plants. Hell, a big chunk of San Francisco was blown sky high a couple years back by a gas leak. And we've been heating buildings with gas for 200 years. But people shit their pants over atomic mishaps. The U.S. Navy's been running nuke-powered ships since 1955 with not a single fatality because of them. Looks like they've got it figured out. Most of the nuke paranoia is from an old and moronic movie called China Syndrome. The idiotic title derived from the idea that a reactor meltdown in the U.S. would burn straight through the planet and exit in communist China. And what's so bad about that? Not too long ago, I saw a home advertised nearby that featured a bomb shelter, and I was curious as hell. So I went to the open house and pretended I was shopping. You can walk in with that just-looking attitude or feign serious interest. Ask all the questions that gets them turned on, like, is the seller open to a cash-only offer? That would make their eyes go wide. Seems like most realtors are female. I don't know why that is, but it is. And it was a female realtor who was showing this place with the bomb shelter, and she was intent on giving me the grand tour of the bedrooms and bathrooms and pointing out all the shit they love to point out that I couldn't give a rat's ass about, like crown moldings. What the hell is with crown moldings? How much time does anyone spend looking at the place where the walls meet the ceiling? And then all the kitchen crap. Chef's kitchens, they call them. My wife once said that kitchens are for women what cars are for men, and I think that's pretty true. All this shit, Viking this and Sub-Zero that and Wolf and Thermidor and on, I don't get it. A refrigerator is a metal box that gets cold. An oven is a metal box that gets hot. Seems kind of simple. But you can drop 15 or 20 grand on a stove easy, and the food that comes out of it won't taste one bit different. But somebody's buying all those pricey cold and hot boxes. And then all that shit from Cuisinart, huh? I think the Cuisinart company is kept in existence solely through bridal registries. All the junk they make for food processing. That's one of the most overused words today, process. I'm sick of it. When you write for a living, people who don't write will often ask you,
what's your creative process?
Like there's some fucking formula. Same as there is for cooking meth or making ball bearings. Another favorite question is,
where do you get your ideas?
Well, you can get them really cheap at Walmart's idea department. But lately Amazon has a much better selection and free overnight delivery. I know a few professional photographers. The question that most irks those guys is,
what camera took that picture?
I wonder if chefs get asked what oven made that coq au vin or what pan sautéed that soft-shell crab. I bet that most women with six-figure chef's kitchens most often make reservations. But having all that high-end stuff just gives them the same feeling guys get when we must have the V8 instead of the V6 or all-wheel drive or run-flat tires. Ooh, those fueled a fuck ton of 007 fantasies when they were hot a few years back. Blofeld and Spectre are gaining on you, and one of their goons puts a bullet in your tires, but you just keep on rolling because you've got run-flat tires. Of course, unless you're on a mission and drawing gunfire, run-flat tires absolutely suck. They ride hard, cost a load to repair, and don't handle all that well. But isn't the idea not to eat processed food? Yet they sell billions of gizmos that do shit you can do with a knife. The only food processing device I have is a Vitamix blender. That fucker could process the General Sherman into toothpicks. And I suppose I dig it because of its raw power. Guys like horsepower, don't we? It's also good for frozen margaritas and thick shakes. People love my thick shakes. The secret ingredient is the malt powder. Basically, my shakes are malt powder and ice cream and a bottle of vanilla extract to give it some kick. Maybe I throw in a couple of teaspoons of milk for nutritional purposes. Switch on that Vitamix and vroom, you're in high-calorie heaven. Hey, I got distracted from the bomb shelter house. So after Tiffany or Megan, the realtor, showed me the chef's kitchen and the cedar-lined closet with the crown moldings, I asked to see the bomb shelter. And when she made a face, I knew I was in for disappointment. I was thinking maybe I'd find some semi-cozy, livable subterranean space, kind of like the inside of an Airstream trailer. Ingenious storage everywhere, filled with provisions, with a 25-year shelf life, state-of-the-art water and air filtration, shortwave radio, an armory of pistols, shotguns, full-auto weapons, maybe a couple dozen grenades, and a few compound bows and crossbows for when silence matters. And of course, at least 10,000 rounds of ammo. That's what I was hoping to see. So after she made the face, she walked me out to the backyard, and there in the middle of it was a rusty diamond plate iron door, flush with a crabgrass lawn. We walked over, and there's a ring pull. Fucking door was heavy as hell and didn't even have a stop hinge. When I let it go, it just slammed back. There was an iron ladder leading down to an unlit cinder block chamber that measured maybe 12 by 12. There was a puddle in the middle of the floor and mold on the walls. Bomb shelter my ass. Maybe for the Revolutionary War or a passing tornado. It was shit. But for a second, I wondered how it would be if suddenly, while in this concrete hole, the air raid sirens went off, and I actually had to remain there with Tiffany. She really wasn't my type, and the accommodations were the worst. I'd probably just go topside and get a thermonuclear tan. I thanked her for the tour and left. But it got me thinking about bomb shelters and survival stuff. Guys like bomb shelters. Men with women's heads, as Frank Zappa called them, they seem to prefer panic rooms. It's just hiding under the bed with four walls and a heavy door. I'd rather shoot it out with the invaders and go out in a blaze of glory. So I did a little bomb shelter research. Not with Google. I don't use that commie search engine. I use DuckDuckGo, which does not track or store your searches. And the bomb shelter selection is vast. And as I shopped, with zero intention of buying, I found myself doing something which I think truly drives the American economy. Lusting after shit I do not need and would not want once the novelty wore off. One of the items I saw that really grabbed me was a couch. Yeah, a couch only a dude would want. It's called the Heracles, which is the Greek version of Hercules. And the Heracles looks like an ordinary couch, except it weighs 600 pounds, because beneath the bulletproof cushions, that's right, bulletproof cushions, is a steel vault that opens quick and contains an arsenal that Scarface would envy. And there's a video of this pretty pointy chick doing a demo of the Heracles couch. It's kick-ass. What man would not want such a couch, especially if she shows up to demo it? I'll post that video on the show page at thatlarryshow.com. And then I got to thinking about what is behind the art of desire. What makes us want things? Once we have the necessities, a full belly, a warm, dry place to sleep, we start dreaming up other shit we need to make our lives, what? More comfortable, more livable. And the marketers come up with needs and then create crap to sell us to fulfill that manufactured need. The best marketers, who have been at it the longest, with a track record that beats the snot out of Madison Avenue, is chicks. Because good marketing and triggering desire has as much to do with reality as silicone implants. When it comes to desire, as opposed to necessity, logic and truth go out the window, and all we give a shit about is the movie in our heads. When we buy a product that's not a commodity, don't we give it a starring role in a movie in our head? As you buy a set of wheels, do you think of yourself stuck in bumper-to-bumper traffic coming home from a shit day at the office? No. When you slide behind the wheel at the dealer's, you're on smooth, two-lane blacktop, blasting through the desert at sunset, or maybe winding up the Pacific Coast Highway. Are you solo? Maybe. More likely, there's an impossibly pointy chick riding shotgun, and she can't keep her eyes or hands off of you. Is there ever a destination in mind? Not in my movie. Which I suppose proves the old bromide about the journey beating the destination. I've always found that to be true, even if I'm on a real road trip. Before I hit the brakes for the night, I like to already know where I'm heading in the morning. Every car has a story. Like no other purchase, I think. Doesn't matter whether it's new or used, although that new car smell is intoxicating. But no one ever walks onto a dealer lot with the same mindset that they have when in, say, a furniture store. The car you buy has to be more than reliable and comfortable and suit your budget. It also has to turn you on, to be a cast member in your life story. In a recent episode, I went off on cars having EDRs, that's event data recorders, the equivalent of an airplane's black box. They tell you how fast the car was moving at the time of impact, if the brakes were applied, and so on. But I think it would be far, far more interesting if cars somehow chronicled the real events in the owner's life. The prom date that turned into a disaster, or the first time he got busy with his girlfriend, or a race to the hospital with a baby on the way. Seems like the most important events of our lives happen when we're not at home or work or school. Imagine if cars had feelings too, memories. If there was something more to them beyond steel and glass and rubber, Stephen King did when he wrote Christine. Most guys really have a romance with their cars, at least in the first few months. It excites almost all the senses. Scent of that interior, that new car smell, or at the gas pumps, the feel of the upholstery or leather, the ride, the handling, the thrill of acceleration, the sound of the motor. Is it a full-throated roar in a muscle car, or a refined purr of a luxury rig, or the laboring wheeze of an underpowered econo box? Maybe that's why electrics and hybrids seem so sterile and boring. They have no voice. And the look, the lines, is it sleek and pointy, a true whip? Or is it thick and muscular, with the haunches of flared fenders over the wheels? Is the paint job shiny or matte? And maybe it's topless, probably the sexiest configuration of all. As a kid, I spent a fair amount of time in auto junkyards, but I've not haunted one in a long time. But I often think it would be cool if those rusting hulks came to life after dark and exchanged their stories through the long night. Some sexy coupe telling the pickup truck how she was with her owner through dates and first jobs, watched him fall in love with a wife and drove them to the hospital for 3 deliveries. How in the early days, every weekend meant a wash and vacuum with a wax job maybe 2-3 times a year. But once the first kid came along, priorities changed. He didn't seem to care if there was a ding or a scratch. Hamburger wrappers were left on the floor, and oil changes went from 3,000-mile clockwork to whenever. And then the second kid came along, and she knew the honeymoon was over. He bolted on one of those hideous Thule roof racks and packed it with kitty crap. Soon the floor mats were bunched under the front seats. The cup holders were gummy with spilled soda, and a cracked taillight was extinguished, never to be replaced. As she carried him and the wife to the hospital for the third child, she knew goodbye was near. The wife actually used the word minivan, and she knew she'd be history. The sexy coupe would sigh as the wind whistled through her rusting rocker panels, and then the old pickup truck would begin to tell his story. You ever see those pictures of supermodels without the war paint and fuck monster hair and heels, just dressed in baggy PJs? Do they make your thing swing? Not so much, huh? But take an average chick and let her equip herself with all the artifice and prosthetics that have been developed and perfected since the Egyptians, and Miss Average will have more dudes following her around than Moses had Israelites. Good makeup, lip gloss, push-up bra, cinched waist, seam nylons, ankle straps, razor manicure, intoxicating perfume, hypnotic shoulder dusters, and a slightly bitchy attitude is kryptonite to most guys. And we all have pretty much the same movie in our heads when it comes to women. But few of us realize they have already written the script in advance. Dates are auditions, and they're the producers. Presentation means everything in the art and science of desire. But then you see a product that makes you wonder how anyone could possibly create a desire for it, like a $70,000 corkscrew. That's right, a $70,000 corkscrew, and it's not even diamond encrusted or made of platinum. Why would somebody actually feel cool using that, regardless of wealth? I just feel like an idiot. But maybe it's akin to that thing about lighting cigars with $100 bills. People do it because they can. Spending money is fun, but wasting money seems insane. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Stop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com for more content and a big archive of episodes. And while you're there, click one of those subscribe buttons. Apple, Android, email, Spotify, anyone will do. If you like what you just heard, Why not help us keep the lights on? Click that Patreon button and join the Take No Shit Dojo. Follow the show on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Yeah, we're there now too. My friends, whatever movie is playing in your head, whether you're touring ruins or on a date/audition, watch out for booby traps. I'll see you next Tuesday. And until that time, take no shit.